You're listening to audio from Liberty Church Coomera. For more information about our family of churches, visit us online at liberty.church.
I remember we call these things dead-end jobs. I was 17 and I needed a job, and I got a job for 2 weeks. My job involved wearing a wetsuit and wading into a lake slash pond to cut lilies. I would cut the lilies out, place them in a boat, walk back to the shore, empty the lilies, eat, sleep, repeat for 2 weeks. You'd think, Darren, sure you got out of that job quick. Sure didn't. I was there for another 6 months, enjoying the hevelness of work. I shoveled poo from horses, collected, put in bags, and sold it. It nowhere nearly recovered my alley rate. I did so many vaporous things. I literally collect sticks at one point. It was a terrible job. And I asked myself, does this matter? Is what I'm doing even, is there a point to all this? Has ever work ever felt futile? Have you ever felt that's meaningless? Have you ever wondered, gosh, does any of this count? And not just the work itself, but the effects of the work. Will this matter beyond me? A lot of people today want work to matter, change the world, contribute to where my gifts and the aches of the world collide, and that is where I work, and I'll make a difference. But after you're dead and gone, does it matter? It's not uncommon for us today, is it, to find value through our work? I know I certainly have had that temptation to want to find my value and identity in what I do, particularly in this job. When people ask what I did, I certainly didn't tell them I shoveled poo for a living. Said I was a property manager on a lake with horses. We can often look to work to find our sense of meaning, sense of purpose, sense of value. So somewhere, I think if you're here, you probably approach work somewhere on a spectrum between frustration and fulfillment. And work can sometimes be both. It can be fickle. Some days can be amazing. You think, this is it. It can't get any better. And then it changes. I think of Airbnb. They, as a result of the coronavirus, had 75% of their net worth wiped out within 2 weeks. Hevel, vapor. So what of our wisdom and work will last? Well, let's turn and see what Kohelet says, and we will look to having some kind of reconstructive answer after we dip into the Hevelness. So hang in there with me. Verse 12 says this, "So I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly, for what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done." So Kohelet begins by showing us the problem of his finding, and the problem is this. Essentially, after him being the king, if he is characterized by the person Solomon, which we're saying he's characterized, the author doesn't say that he is Solomon, but he's characteristic of Solomon, well, he was the wisest king who ever lived. So what hope is there for another king coming after him to untangle the web, to solve the riddle? How will future kings handle this problem? The reality is they won't be able to untangle it. It's madness, it's folly. They won't be able to find gain. The second problem is around death, verse 13. He says, "Wisdom is like a light. It can show you a path. The wise have eyes to see, so the eyes in their head, they can see so as avoid danger." So there's some benefit in that. "The fool, however, is in darkness, so they stumble and fall. However, the darkness of death comes for them both." Death, that unwelcome guest. Death, that vicious reaper. Death, that great leveler. Makes you ask the question, what's the point of being wise? If death comes and flattens everything out, has there been any gain? If a wise stock investor and a fool who lived week to week both end up at zero after the stock market crashes, what gain was there in truly being wise? If at the end, it's all leveled out. The same event happens to them all. Why then, Kohelet laments, have I been so very wise? Have you ever thought that in your job? Why did I work so hard for this when what I've done or contributed hasn't seemed to matter or count? Imagine this in a greater context. The pain of learning, of gaining wisdom, he says, are null and void. And the problem is not just that the fate of the wise and the fool is the same. The problem is their memories. The legacy won't be remembered. This too is Havel, verse 15. It would be nice to be remembered as a person of wisdom and not a twit, essentially what he says. But he says, the wise die just like the fool. And in the end, memories are too short to make wisdom worthwhile. The shadow of death is cast over both. Death, that villain in the story. Death, that unstoppable force. Death, that great leveler. Kellett's response, you see in verse 17, is then to hate life. So I hated life because what is done under the sun was grievous to me. For all is vanity and is striving after the wind. He sees the absurdity of it all. He sees into the future that this is Havel, and it makes him hate the present. We have these magnetic shapes at our house that connect and build. It's quite incredible little toys. And often Teagues will build them, and she's much more into it than me. But she'll build these structures, and she's laid a foundation, and she gets these things up quite high, sometimes taller than our son Dawson. And it's incredible. That is, of course, until Dawson, that great leveler, comes along. Crash. It's gone. Destroyed. And I can see it in Tegan's eyes sometimes. She tries to protect the building of this desolation. She tries to guard it. She tries to fend him off. I think she's put a palm in now and then. I'm not sure. But the interesting thing is, after it's crashed and fallen down, I see Tegan go to rebuild. And you can see the despair in her face. She builds just knowing that whatever she creates will come tumbling down. Havel. So she despairs. Kohelet despairs, because guess what? He doesn't just see the here and the now. He looks toward the future, and he sees that great wrecking ball of death coming, and he says, Havel. Well, under the sun, for Kohelet, isn't really a place to find gain, is it? He just showed us the futility, the Havel, of walking in wisdom and being wise. Now he turns his attention to work or labor, the stuff we do to bring order and beauty into the world, sometimes paid or not. Work, that dreaded beast. Work, that weary path. Now, he barely has you in the room of consideration to consider if work could possibly be a place of gain, of satisfaction, before he has slammed the door shut. Do you see that, verse 18? I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, his groaning heard in many rooms away. Why the hate, Kohelet, you ask? Well, he says, I worked hard for this. I sacrificed. I applied myself to wisdom, and I don't get to keep it, and it may end up in the hands of a fool. Havel, vanity. You can see the vapor of work is this. You can't keep it, can you? The product of your toil, the monetary worth, the artifacts, after you have died, it's gone from your grip. Havel. Kohelet clearly isn't the kind of person you want writing a family will, is he? He turns his thinking to despair in verse 20. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes, listen, this is his reason. Sometimes a person who is toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is a vanity and a great evil. A great evil, he says. He pronounces judgment on this. So do not think that the Kohelet is indifferent to the emptiness, the futility, the vaporness of this discovery. He says it's a great evil. It frustrates him. The fact that one who has not worked for it gets it, the fact that the curtain of death closes on both the wise and the fool, the fact that human endeavor cannot be remembered, it cannot be retained, and it cannot be passed on, this too is Havel. It is like vapor. It is absurd. How is it? This is the question. How is it that the gain from hard toil is ultimately out of your hands? It's not in your hands. you literally cannot get a grip on it. Work that unhappy business. Work that evil menace. Work that vain pursuit is no match for death, that great leveler. Perhaps you say we could live for the weekend, grind it out from the week. At least I can party come Friday. Or if you're in hospitality, party come Tuesday and Wednesday. Or maybe I can just finish the day and at least I get to put my feet up. Come on, we've got that right. Doesn't matter how sucky the job is, I can put my feet up and enjoy my rewards. Kohelet won't grant such futile thinking. Verse 22, what has a man from all the toil and striving of heart in which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. He says the days are long, the nights are longer. Labor keeps him busy during the day, and his labor keeps him up at night. You had those nights where you've been thinking about work throughout the evening? Sleepless nights, toil, the anxiety of it. How will I provide? How will I get? How will I maneuver this, make this work, get this done, get it accomplished? He says, Havel. I was trying to think through Kohelet and what would be a good job for him to do. I thought of some jobs that wouldn't be good. I didn't think he'd be good as a keynote speaker at a career expo. Delivers the opening address. Havel, my little ones. Havel, waste your time learning, waste your time toiling. At the end of the day, we all end up in the same place. Life is difficult, then you die. Here is an inflatable ball. Enjoy. Pop. Havel. But I think he's onto something. Do you have any resonance with what he's saying? Do you feel any sense of truth in what he's saying about the difficulty, the futility, the vaporness of looking to work as ultimate? Do you pick up on anything? See, I think sometimes he's spot on. And annoyingly so. When you want something to give you satisfaction, but it doesn't seem to deliver. It's like ordering something with Australian Post in March and still hasn't arrived. That's the kind of feeling he has when it comes to work. Do you see what he's saying? He's trying to help us see that meaning, ultimate gain, that which your soul is craving, will not be found in getting further up the rank, in just a change of job, in a switch of career, in a few extra dollars. For parents and children, there is not extra gain to be found when the children move out of that life stage. If we just get them to school, if we just get them to high school, if we can just get them out the house, if we can just get them through study, if we can just get them a job, if we can just get them out of the house again, if we can just get them to take us in, because now we need a place to stay. Then we will enjoy. No. Kohelet says no. So there's an insight Kohelet is wanting to invite us all in. He's trying to tell us that he's walked down the road a little bit further. He's seen the Havelness, the pursuit of work as ultimate. He said, meaningless. And you might go, well, I'm not convinced. My story will be different. I can find fullness of satisfaction in work, Darren. Well, listen, Kohelet has worked harder than you. He's had more interesting jobs than you. He's created more than you. His resume is way more impressive than anything you and I will ever achieve. And he says, no. If I just had 1/100th of what he had, then I would be satisfied with work. And Kohelet says, no, you wouldn't. You just don't know it yet. You're not far enough down the rabbit hole to experience that the burrow is a dead end and the death of fox is on your tail. Under the sun, there is no gain. It is all Havel. So if the problem for Kohelet is that death and its arbitrary kind of dishing out wipes away any gain in wisdom or work. Do you see that? Death comes and levels it all. So what's the solution? Because Darren, it's nice that you're telling me this encouraging words. What's the solution? Well, this is the part where I really need us to listen in closely. Because this is probably where it gets a little bit tricky in the text. We've got to pay attention. Qohelet is going to provide a solution for us. And the question we have to ask is twofold. The first question I want you to think about and consider is Qohelet in his teaching lifting his eyes above the sun? Is Qohelet's advice to be heeded by us and embraced as good? Or should we still be wary knowing that the narrator is presenting to us teachings from a guy where we need to pay careful attention? I'm going to give you two readings and we will discern which one is the right one. I encourage you to receive the teachings, hold fast to what is good. So, I do not mind if you stand with many centuries of good scholarship and disagree with me on this. It's okay. So there's two readings. There's a positive reading and there's somewhat of a negative reading. And how you understand Qohelet is how you will kind of understand these passages, particularly when he gives advice. So the first thing is this. Verse 24, Qohelet seems to give us an answer. It sounds wonderful, doesn't it? There is nothing better for a person that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in all his toil. I picture the person who's worked hard for the year, and they're now sitting back on Hamilton Island, sipping margaritas and soda water and lemonade, if they're not into that, and they're eating, it's wonderful, they're just enjoying life, and it's incredible. It's nothing better. Eat, drink, find enjoyment in what you do. So the positive reading is this. Qohelet observes, listen, that there is a kind of side benefit to toil in this world, isn't there? There's kind of some kind of reward, some sense of pleasure through what you accomplished. The ability to enjoy the little things in life is God's gift to you. Once you no longer look to the created things in this world to be your source of fulfillment, you are freed up to enjoy them. This is for the one who trusts in God, and those who don't trust in God will remain under the sun, experience the havel of life. Essentially, God's going to give good things to good people and bad things to bad people. This is Qohelet's reading of this text. Pursue pleasure on your own under the sun and it vanishes. But receive pleasure as a gift from God and voila, it is full. Thus, the trick is revealed. Now, there is a second reading to what Qohelet's saying. Everything that I've said so far, I think is biblically true. So let me acknowledge that. It's biblically true. And it does hold up into the broad scope of the Bible's teaching. That if you look to the things of this world as ultimate, you will find that they are ultimately futile. But if you are able to receive the good things in this world as God's gifts, then you're freed up to enjoy them. That's true. I'm not convinced, though, that Qohelet has his eyes above the sun. And I'm not convinced that his instruction here to eat, drink, and be merry has gone far enough down in obedience to what God and the gospel would have us do. So engage your thinking here to see this is right and hold fast to what is true. First reason, I think what we have here in his statement is not so much an affirmation, but rather a sense of resignation. I think he has not affirmation that this is good, but rather resignation. Has he not already showed us the futility of pleasure and of toil and of wisdom? He's already revealed that there is some limited gain in pleasure, but it's not ultimate. It's not ultimately fulfilling. Life under the sun is havel, and fleeting pleasures for Qohelet is actually as good as it gets. He doesn't say this in the positive, this is good. He states it in the negative. There is nothing better. So when he's saying this, I think he gets the impression, and I use an example. Have you ever arrived in a hotel room that is incredible and amazing, and you've stood there and gone, whoa, this is it. This is it. But have you ever arrived in a hotel room or an Airbnb booking and kind of gone, this is it? If you've been on Red Frog's mission trips, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. And there is a sense in which you can say, hey, there is nothing better than to eat and drink and find enjoyment in what you do. And there is a way to say it that's like, it's nothing better, eat, drink, and what you do. Because you're going to die, and it's all havel. So if you can drink up and eat now and get some enjoyment out of it, this is as good as it gets. If you can squeeze some gain out of the limited joy that might come your way in this earth, gee, you're a lucky person. Secondly, access to this limited joy is outside of Qohelet's hands, and he's left it in God's. Qohelet starts to show his cards now of how he views God. Now, when you read God here, we need to see this as Qohelet's view of God, and we will work out through the rest of the book, and I encourage you, read Ecclesiastes weekly and see how Qohelet has a view of God. He says this also I saw is from the hand of God. From apart from him, who can eat or joy and have enjoyment? So I think Qohelet is able to recognize that simple pleasures do come from the hand of God, but not in some God as good sovereign provider who gives loving gifts to his children, New Testament kind of understanding, but rather as a divine distributor who gives according to his disposition towards you, either pleasing or offensive. I don't think Qohelet considers himself a recipient of this kind of gain or satisfaction from the divine hand. And if you look forward in 6 verse 2, this is what he says. He says, there is an evil that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possession, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all his desires. Who do you think he's talking about? Himself. So he lacks nothing in all that he desires, yet God does not give him power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. For Qohelet, he says, this kind of enjoyment is ultimately out of your hands, and it's in God's. This is not in a way that is affirmation, but I think it's frustration. It's resignation. Verse 26, for the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. The very things he's already told us are somewhat havel, but to the sinner he's given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to the one who pleases God. This also, he says, is vanity and a striving after the wind. So now we'll go slowly here for a moment. Just keep reading the text here. So slowly. So if you recall, what has he already said in today's passage? He said, you can be really, really wise, but at the end you die and your stuff can go to an idiot. He's just said, you can be a fool and just gather and collect, and then when you die, it goes to someone who pleases God and is wise. This also is havel. This one's havel. He's basically cancelled out any kind of gain that would happen by being a wise or being a fool. He's cancelled it out. The two views, people here, are those who please God and those who don't please God, or those who have found favour in God's eyes and those who fall short. The word for, you might translate sinner, one who's fallen short. It's like offender of God. And Qohelet's trying to make sense of this all. How is this arbitrary nature of this divine God who some people seem to get some enjoyment here, and if you can get it, great, but then some don't, because even after they do get enjoyment, it just goes to someone else. This whole thing is havel. Do you see his frustration? Do you feel my frustration in reading it? The frustration, the havelness of it all? Trying to make sense of the asymmetry of effort and result, of toil and gain, of wisdom and work, because in the end, listen, it's all out of your hands. Qohelet finds it havel. You could not really find enjoyment unless God wills it. So if you can grab it whilst you can, get it. If you can enjoy a Snickers bar, enjoy it. If you can enjoy Nando's, brilliant. If you can enjoy a cup of cold water, great. If you can finish your day and go, that was nice, excellent. Friends, this is as good as it gets on earth. Because you die, and it's all havel anyway. Have you thought about what it would be if you took his advice? Either in the positive or in the negative. Eat, drink, and be merry. Could you imagine if you applied the truth in your life? Listen, there is nothing better than to eat and drink and work. How well do you think that would go for you? There is nothing better to eat and drink. I think Jesus has a parable of a guy who applies Qohelet's teaching. And again, Qohelet's teaching is this summary of kind of Israel's wisdom teaching at the time. Not the historical, true, good, biblical, God-honoring, God-fearing wisdom, but a kind of pre-modern secularism that's crept in. Listen, in Luke 12, 17 to 21, there's a rich man who toiled hard and stored up lots of stuff. So you know the story? It's the person who's worked hard to save money. Verse 19 says, "And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry." Sound familiar? But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is for the one who does, one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." Do you see Jesus' condemnation of the eat and drink, be merry approach to life? Do you see in this passage the things this person had prepared after he's gone? Whose will they be? Jesus is bringing out the same logic. They go to someone else. So why would you make this your approach to life? Well, I wonder how you read it. Do you read it positively? As Qohelet, this is what he's saying, and therefore I should. Or do you read it negatively? In a sense, like, I'm not sure we should be listening to you. Well, if we don't listen to Qohelet, what on earth are we supposed to do? We get stuck in this Havel cycle on a treadmill, just finding the futileness of it all. Well, you say, Darren, is it not true that God is the giver of gifts and joy in life? And you'll be very glad to say, yes, I affirm that he does. The Bible affirms he does. So what we need to do, again, Qohelet is painting for us a black backdrop. So when the words truth are written in white, you may see it clearly. 1 Timothy 6:17 says, "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God," listen, "who richly provides us with everything to enjoy." We need to have a Christian ethos, a Christian ethic of enjoying the good gifts in life. Why? Because they come from God. They come from God. So God richly provides us with things to enjoy. But we get there not by heeding Qohelet's carpe diem, seize the day, eat, drink, and be merry. And I don't think he's talking about excess of wine here. I don't think he's meaning drunkenness and sin. I don't think he's just meaning enjoy the small things. We don't get there by heeding Qohelet's word. In fact, we need another teacher. We need a gap. We need showing us a need for something else. What are those white words of truth? Well, do you remember who Qohelet's enemies are in today's teaching? There is the enemy of death who is coming, and there is the temporal nature of gain. There is death, and there is the temporal nature of gain. We can reconstruct now with a biblical understanding of how does death be defeated so that what I do now will last? There's a good question, isn't it? How does death get overcome so what I do now may last? Well, work is a good gift from God when it's connected to God and the eternal kingdom. If you want something positive to take away, if you have in your mind or you have a notepad or something, work is a good gift from God when it's connected to God and to the eternal kingdom. See, death won't be the great leveler for the Christian. 1 Corinthians 15:58 shows that the sting of death has been removed. Jesus' resurrection says there is life after death. The havel of death is no longer, listen, a separation from your efforts, but it is a doorway into receiving them for what they truly are. On that day, they will all be laid bare. Therefore, my beloved, he says in 1 Corinthians 15:58, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Why? Knowing that in the Lord, your labor is not in vain. Your work, your toil, done for the glory of God, lived above the sun, is not in vain. Death is the gateway to having more of Christ, isn't it? It's not the end. Qohelet, death was the great leveler. For Paul, it is the great opener. Remember back to Philippians? The very thing he was laboring for the Christians, is that they would have more of Christ, that he would have more of Christ, more knowledge of his ways, more knowledge of his words. I shall slow down. more alignment to his ways. Friends, our union with Christ is how we overcome the sting of death. You get united to Christ and your work matters. The days matter. What you do matters, because death isn't the end. There's coming a day when every deed that you've done, every work, every patient moment of endurance, every difficulty will be laid before God, and it will be assessed and it will be judged. Only that which was done for Christ will last. Death isn't the end. If death's not the end, well, work is also not ultimately for us, but it's for God. See, Qohelet, once again, is very self-centered. He has himself in the view of this great test. And so he doesn't think about leaving his possessions and wealth to start orphanages and fund hospitals and leave to his children to have an inheritance. None of that is on his radar. He just says, it might go to someone else. That's terrible. No gain for me. He's consistent for under the sun, but he's limited in his scope of view of reality, because we know there is life above the sun. I had a jingle growing up in my head, and I won't trouble you with singing it now. But from Colossians 3:23, it said, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men." There's a brilliant little jingle to it. This verse is actually quite insightful, isn't it? You don't ultimately, it's telling you, don't ultimately work for your boss. You have a higher boss, and his name is God. Whatever you do covers the scope of your work, which means whatever you do. Do work at it with all your heart, i.e. don't be half-hearted in your labor. God isn't actually after half-hearted people working. Wholehearted people, because you can bring your whole heart before the Lord. And the recipient is the Lord, not self. So when we think about work, if you want to avoid the emptiness of work, start taking your eyes off yourself and start putting them onto God as ultimate one who you're working for. A great way when the days are long, and the raising of children, or the sitting in the office, or the laboring outside, or the punching of keys is difficult. Remember, I am offering this up to the Lord as a gift, not for self. We are seeing that our work is not just for the here and now, but it is to be seen for eternity. That verse 24 goes on in Colossians 3. It says, "Knowing that from the Lord you'll receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ." Listen, because of Jesus, your work is not meaningless. It is meaningful. What you do matters, and how you do it matters. You're invited to now offer it to the Lord. And so we start to make sense of work. We start to acknowledge, we start to align ourselves. Instead of attaching your understanding of work to the cultural wagon that says you need to be significant, you need to make money, you need to find a job that fits in with your personality, your interests, your dreams, and your desires. And if any of those things are out, God forbid, do not do that. Pursue your happiness through your work. You unhitch from that wagon, you attach it to Christ, and you say, "Christ, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I can do it unto you and be satisfied. Because it's not going to be in vain." You attach yourself to this big story of the Bible, which says, friends, work was a good gift given by God. We were created to toil and keep in the Garden of Eden, to create, to cultivate, to bring order and beauty. That's what you do when you work. You bring order out of chaos. Accountants take random numbers and put them in order. Police take dysfunctional people and bring things straight. Baristas take coffee beans and milk and get it the right temperature and the right grind and make a latte. You take that which is chaotic and you bring order. You are participating in the creative mandate. I wonder, tomorrow when you go to work, will you think that your job is something that is blessed by God? You are participating in divine creativity, bringing chaos into order. We all know, because of the fall, our work is futile. There is a sense of difficulty to it. Thorns and thistles will wage against you, but you shall eat from it. So don't be expected. Don't be expected that the work will be easy. It will be difficult because it is cursed. And when you feel the difficulties of work, it is not meant to set you to a trajectory that says eat, drink, and be merry. It is meant to set you to a trajectory that says, I'm in need of someone to redeem this thing. Because this difficulty, frustration, and futility, it will matter for eternity. Because I'm offering this up to the Lord. So you can sing with the psalmist, 94:14, satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad in all our days. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Friends, do you invite Jesus into your work? Are you aware that what you do, that God is present with you in that work? Ask him to be part of it. Invite him to help you see the eternal perspective of your work. Isaiah 65:21-23 speaks of new heavens and new earth where we shall build and plant and labor will not be in vain. Do you know the new heavens and new earth is the best thing for you right now who feel like you don't get anywhere in your job? Because once you enter eternity, the kingdom, you'll be able to work for eternity, create and listen. None of it will be in vain. You will get to have experiences in eternity that will be long-lasting. So if you find yourself right now in a job that feels less than amazing, less than ideal for you, eternity is coming. You'll have all the time in the world then. Right now, work unto the Lord with all your heart, because you are not working for people, you're working for God. Under the sun, work is hard. And Jesus understands. Jesus lived life under the sun. He toiled, he labored, performed miracles. He did work. But he taught us to keep our eyes above the sun, didn't he? Jesus taught us to not just look under the sun, but look to the kingdom of heaven. It's not toil and worry about what you will eat or drink. Rather, look at the birds. Look at the flowers in the field. If your heavenly Father can feed them and clothe them, will he not provide for you? Are you not more important? Work gets redeemed with Christ. Just not labor for temporary riches, but to store up treasures in heaven. To not see God's sovereignty as a resignation, but to trust it in affirmation that he provides for us. So work unto the Lord, friends. When it's done unto God, it is not meaningless. It is not vanity. It is full. It is satisfying. And it has eternal reward. The white words of truth tell us when you get a hold of God, then work will lose its hold on you, bringing you into freedom and fullness. We finish with these words from C.T. Studd. He said, two little lines I've heard one day, traveling along life's busy way, bringing conviction to my heart and from my mind would not depart. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, a few brief years, each with its burdens, hopes and fears, each with its clay I must fulfill, living for self or in his will. Only one life, 'twill soon be past, only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, 'twill soon be past, only what's done for Christ will last. And when I am dying, how happy I'll be if the lamp of my life has been burnt out for thee. Work unto the Lord. Eternity awaits. All is not vapor. Let's pray. God, thank you for teaching us that our work matters, but that it doesn't matter ultimately. Working unto you matters ultimately. And in that, God, we find fulfillment. Would you teach us this lesson? Would you help free the grip in our hearts and our hands to look to the things of this earth, the jobs we do, the money we make, as somehow meaningful? Would you free us up, Lord, to live for you? We pray in your wonderful name. Amen. Let's respond in worship.